Good afternoon, everybody. We'll make a start. I'm in admiration of everybody because not only did they change the time, they changed the location. You still found me, so that's very impressive. Tomorrow we're back to 4:45. So just keep watching the schedule because it does change from day to day. All right. The last couple of occasions we've been talking on some pretty heavy duty items. So today I wanted to talk about something which maybe is a bit lighter, maybe not. We'll talk about dreams. If you saw on the list of topics, this is a topic that I've actually spoken about here but a number of years ago, and it's fascinating. There are books available. I don't know if they have them in the library here, but if you go to your local library, wherever you are, you'll find books of dream interpretation. Okay, and if you're a heavy dreamer, as some of you may be, I don't think I dream a lot. At least I don't remember the dreams. It could be I do dream, but I just don't remember them. But you never know. There may very well be significance, possibly, I say possibly with a capital P, significance are in what you're dreaming. And we'll see some examples. What we're going to do is look at the Jewish perspective. We'll try and find out, is there anything in a dream remotely to be concerned about or remotely to be interested in? We'll find, in fact, that the sources are very mixed. There are some Gemaras which talk about dreams in a very positive way. Some Gemaras that basically say it's shtut, it's nonsense. So, you know, we'll have to deal with a contradiction in Talmud dealing with this topic of dreams. Again, you know, we just think about the examples in the Torah that we know about, right? We read yesterday, Bilam. Bilam is waiting for God to give him a response. So he has a dream. Okay, that's kind of a famous example. Go back to Yaakov Avinu, and he's on the way, you know, running away from home because of Esau and the whole story with the blessings. And he lays down and he has a dream, and he sees the ladder going up to heaven, and we're told what the dream is, and the angels going up, the angels going down, and the whole story. It's all about a dream. Yosef, my goodness, you know, the whole story revolves around dreams. Alright, this is one of the famous questions. Why didn't Yosef send a postcard, or the equivalent of those days, to his father? He's in Egypt for 22 years, and he never ever sends his father a message. You know, your father's in pain. He doesn't know whether you're alive or dead. Send him a message. He never does. And one of the answers given, the Ramban says, is because he wanted the dreams to be fulfilled. Yosef understood that the dreams that he had, the sun and the moon bowing down, you know, the famous things, the wheat, all of that had to be fulfilled. He saw it as a prophecy. So as far as Yosef was concerned, a dream is for real. So again, in the Torah, there are the butler, the baker, the famous story, the Sarah Mashkin, Sarah Ovid, you know, they have dreams, and that obviously becomes, again, for Yosef, a prophecy. There it's kind of a significant thing because it depends how you interpret the dream. Okay, and again, the same thing with Paro. And all of this becomes very, very interesting. The Torah doesn't shy away from dreams. And in fact, even when you look in the writings of the Rambam, the Moreh Nevuchim, you'll find something very fascinating. We all know the story of the angels coming to visit Avraham Avinu. And we all believe that this was a story that took place. The Rambam says, never took place. Rambam says, it was a dream. Avraham went to sleep and he dreamt that the angels came to him. And through that dream, he understood what was going to be in terms of Sarah and in terms of Lot and all the story. So according to Rambam, it's not a real event, it's a dream. So again, that's not everybody's opinion, obviously, but you know, dreams become really, really significant. So again, what do we do with this material? We've got the dreams in the Torah. I could go on and on and on. There are famous dreams in the Navi. You've got dreams later on, you know, the famous Belshazzar, you know, with the writing on the wall and all of this kind of dreamlike sequences. You know, it goes on. It's right through the, literally through the Bible from beginning to end. So that's the reality as far as we're concerned. The Gemara leaves us, for want of a better word, slightly confused. There's a famous Gemara in Brachot. I'll just read it to you. Gemara in Brachot 55. Gemara says, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Shlosha chalomot mitkaimim. Three dreams come true. That's good to know. Chalom shel shacharit. The dream that you have in the morning. Okay, I suppose you call it daydreaming, maybe. I don't know. I wonder sometimes with students when they're sitting there looking out the window and they're daydreaming what they're thinking about. But if you dream in the morning, okay, that's kind of interesting. Chalom shel chalam lo chavero. Interesting. Also, if a dream is dreamt about you by a friend. Right? That happens to teachers very often. Those of you who are teachers, the student will come up to you and say, "Oh, sir, I dreamt about you last night." So I get a bit worried about this because, you know, the Gemara says, I've got to be careful here. What are they going to tell me? You know, hopefully it was a good dream. And then thirdly, b'chalom shenifta b'toch chalom. If there is an interpretation of a dream within a dream, that's obviously a reference to Yosef and the butler and baker, where the rabbis explain that really the dream that one of them had was an interpretation of what was going to happen. You know, in other words, within the dream there was already the interpretation. Okay, which Yosef managed to work out. And he says, "V'yeshama af chalom shenishne." And that's of course with Paro, a dream that's repeated. Because remember, Yosef says to Paro, the fact that your dream was repeated is a sign that it's going to come true. So that's the Gemara. And the Gemara seems to be very comfortable, at the moment at least, with dreams. Okay, we're happy with that. And there's another Gemara, Brachos, which says that a dream, chalom, echa mishishim in nevuah. It's almost, how should we say, it's part of prophecy, if you get a dream. Fine. And interesting halachas about this. If you have a bad dream, what do you do? I once was on a, I suppose you call it a base, I don't know what you call it. The guy at my shul said, "Can you stay behind on a Sunday morning for a few minutes?" And I said, "Fine, you know, he's a nice guy, and I always try and help him out." And he said that somebody had come to the Rav wasn't around that time, he was away, but he said that this person had a bad dream. And we had to do what is called Hatovas Chalom. If you haven't done it, it's very strange. It's a bit like Hatoras Nadarim. You basically, there's a, like a nusach, it's at the back of the siddur, the art scroll siddur, if you have it. And it's like Mutalach, Mutalach, we say with Hatoras Nadarim, you have to, it's a very similar thing. That you have to, as it were, annul the dream. Okay, you annul the dream. It's interesting because my son-in-law did Hatoras Nadarim, well, similar annulment for somebody who had an experience like this who wasn't Jewish. And it wasn't a real Hatovas Chalom, but nevertheless, it's somebody who needed a particular blessing to be said. He came to my son-in-law. We were actually staying, they live in Florida. And we were with them for that particular period of time. And we made a base there, and we could see that this fellow was very troubled by his dream. So we helped him out. We did a kind of Hatovas Chalom. It wasn't really, because it wasn't Jewish. But the reality was that you could see, once we said what we said, and we explained it to him, wow. This guy was really happy. You know, you can see a whole weight go off his shoulders. It was really an interesting experience. We talk about dreams in the Duchenik. This is really strange. And you can get Stocker at any time. Stocker always seems to work for everything. So that's always a good idea. In the Davening, if you look at the Tefillah that some people say after the Duchenik, and again, I just mentioned I've been in Israel, and Duchenik in Israel is a different proposition. They Duchenik in Shalayim every day. So if you blink, you miss it. That's literally how it is. And of course, they duchen. Sorry? Kahane, but they duchen for everybody every single day. So, and they do it very quickly. So before you look around, you're trying to catch up the davening. They've already gone, they've duchen. You know, you missed it because it's like unbelievable. And the same thing happens on Yontem. In our shuls on Yontem, duchen is a big performance. If you go to the Yekis, then it's absolutely a big performance. The song, the nusach is beautiful. And in Israel, whoosh, it's like literally like a dream. It goes by. And it's so interesting, the Duchening. If you look at the paragraphs that are said after the Duchening, there's a paragraph, while Duchening is going on, when the Kohenim are singing, da, 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 whatever tune you know, then one of those paragraphs deals with dreams. Chalom, chalamti, right? And it says then, you know, you should try and annul the dream at that time. It's something that we take quite seriously. And yet, we've got a Gemara, in Horeo, another section of Talmud, and it says, I'll read what it says, Omar, son rabbi said, Divrei chalamot lo ma'alim lo moridin. As they say in Yiddish, nishtahin and nishtahat. Right? It's got absolutely no effect on you, has no relevance, as they say. It doesn't go up, doesn't go down. Okay, it's like a lift that's broken, elevator's broken, so there's nothing happening. No worth at all. Rashi, interestingly, talks about the dream of Yosef, where he seems to suggest that his mother is going to bow down to him. His mother is dead already. So Rashi says that Yosef did not realize that this was referring, to, in fact, to Bilhah. Bilhah who brought him up. Instead of his mother, Rachel, who's already died. She died in childbirth, giving birth to Binyamin, we know. When Yosef has his dream, his mother's already dead. And who's going to come and bow down to him? One of the Shvachot, one of the maidens. But Rashi brings the comment, Rabotenu lamdu mikam, a dream always has Dvarim Batalim. So on the one hand, we've got the rabbi saying a dream is to be taken seriously. We've got the idea that it's close to prophecy. We've got this idea that we take it seriously, that when we have a certain chance to annul a dream, we would annul it if we can. And Tanis Chalom is one of those fasts which even on Shabbat you can fast the Tanis Chalom. You can fast a fast which is to do with a bad dream. And it's a very unusual halacha. It's clear. I always argue that the Chazal and the rabbis following the period of the Talmud, they were great psychologists, even though they probably didn't know the word psychology. And they understood that people are troubled by dreams and by worries and whatever it may be, and they give a permission to fast on a Shabbos. You know, fasting on Shabbos is not, we do it for Yom Kippur, that's it. Ta'anis Chalom, if you want to fast a dream, fast because of a bad dream, you can even do that on Shabbat. And that becomes a really sort of a major thing. And yet, we saw another Gemara which says it's all nonsense. And we saw a Gemara which says, or Rashi says, that it's got shtut, it's complete. You know, there's no dream without some complete irrelevant material. In which case, what do we say? For real or not for real? Alright? You know, I always think of Martin Luther King. I had a dream. So if we say that in our religious perspective, is it for real, a dream? Or do we say, Narishkeit? What do we say? And there's an interesting statement in the Gemara. The Gemara is already bothered by this. Talmud, there's a lot of Talmud about this. And doesn't really help us, but I'll read the Gemara anyway. There was a famous rabbi called Shmuel. Shmuel, there was two rabbis, Rav and Shmuel. They always argue with each other, as rabbis tend to do. And what happened was, Shmuel ki ha b'chosi chama. The Gemara says like this. Shmuel used to see, from time to time, chama bisha, bad dream. He had a bad dream. So what did he do? Amar, so he used to say a pasuk. Achalamot hashav yidaber. This dream is shav. Shav means literally in vain, nothing. It's luft, it's nothing. Ki hava chazi chal matava. It says when he saw a good dream, Alma, he said, Bechia chalomot hashav yidaber. Right? I just said the dreams are nothing, but I had a good dream, I won the lottery. So what do I do with that dream? In his dream he won the lottery. But he said the dream's a waste of time. So he says, no, there's another pasuk. I speak to you in a dream. So Shmuel was prepared to play the both sides of the coin. When it's a bad dream, ignore it. When it's a good dream, it's a message. And the Gemara actually puts it as a kind of a contradiction, the two psukim. And the Gemara says, lo kasha, it depends who delivers the dream. This is a typical Talmud. Kan al yidei malach, kan al yidei shed. If it comes from a malach, from an angel, it's a good dream. It comes from a demon, it's a bad dream. Now how are you supposed to know who's sending you the dream? It doesn't say at the bottom, you know, signed by angel so-and-so or demon so-and-so. So this doesn't really help us very much. It's interesting, of course, the fact that Shmuel, one of the great rabbis, was bothered by this, and that's already giving us an insight. But what's going on? And I'll tell you where it becomes interesting. When you look in the responsa, you look in Jewish law, and you'll find some interesting halachot. There was a question like this. That a father in a dream comes to a son and he tells him that there's money which was missing where it is. So the son wakes up and he goes out into the garden or whatever, digs it up, and he finds the money. And the question then is there, for instance, if there is an obligation on that money, let's say it was something that had to be taken to the temple or something like that, to the Beit HaMikdash, does the dream conveying the position of the money and you find it, do you then have to fulfill the obligation on that money, or is it considered to be finding a treasure with no obligations whatsoever? That's the halachic ramification, one of them, that the rabbis are concerned with. It's kind of interesting. I don't have such dreams. I wish, you know, sometimes, as I always like to think, one day I'll dream the numbers of the lottery and then we'll be happy. But it never seems to happen in practice. I always miss one or two numbers at the end there. There is another halacha, which is an interesting thing. What happens if you dream that you make an oath? We know in Jewish law, making a shavuah is very serious. Making an oath is something that you don't do lightly, but you did it in your dream. You stood up, you know, in front of the dayan, in front of the beis din, and you're making an oath, the promise to do something, or to fulfill whatever obligation. So again, are you supposed to fulfill it, or are you not supposed to fulfill it? And there are halachic discussions about this, which again highlight this kind of tension. What I'm trying to show you is that in fact, this turns out to be not black and white like sometimes things tend to be in Jewish law. This is very grey. it's a gray area where sometimes the dream is taken, should be taken seriously, and sometimes the dream should be ignored. And the real challenge for us is to know how to deal with that, how to handle it. So let me just share with you maybe one or two insights on what to do when you have this type of dream. Listen to this. The Abarbanel, very famous rabbi, when did he live? He lived around the 1490s. He was exiled with the Jews of Spain. He had a very high position in the Spanish government. Abarbanel was, I think, either the head of the treasury. He was very high up. And when the king and queen of Spain decided to throw out the Jews, in 1492 they went to the Abarbanel and they said to him, "You can stay. You don't have to leave because you're such an important person." And he said, "My brothers are going into exile. There's no way I'm going to stay." And he went. And he went with them to Portugal. He died in 1508. And I think in those last 15 years of his life, that's when he wrote most of his writings, the famous commentaries on the Torah, on the Novi. He wrote an incredible amount of things. I'm sorry if it's a bit cool over here. I made a kind of policy decision. It did. The temperature just went down about 2 degrees since we've been here. We'll try and keep going as much as we can. I'm sorry about that, but I felt this is much better than being in that stuffy room over there. It's a kind of what my grandmother used to call fresh air cure. Put you in the fresh air and everything gets cured, but it doesn't always work. That's it. That's how it is. So, again, back to the Abarbanel. By the way, the expert on the Abarbanel is interesting. A man who wrote his thesis, his doctrine on the Abarbanel, is Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, his father. His father is, in fact, a professor in Cornell. I think he's still alive. Professor Netanyahu. And his expertise is on Don Yitzhak Abarbanel, the famous rabbi of the 1400s in Spain. So it's kind of interesting connection there to Israeli politics. But there you go. Abarbanel wrote this wonderful commentary. It's spectacular. And he talks about the story, obviously, of the dreams with the story of Paro. And he's saying like this. So he says, all right, Dugri, you know, we're gonna discuss this straight. You will say to yourself, "Kama yibadlu chalamot hashav ha mechalamot atzodkim." In other words, what is the real difference between a dream which is, as we say, a waste of time, and a dream which is tzodek, which has something in it? Hamushpa'in eitzel acholeim otam, that it affects the person who dreams. So how do we tell the difference between a real dream and, for want of a better word, shtuyot, something which is complete waste of time? So the Abarbanel says something very interesting. He says, "Ani yashiv chamilin." He says, "I'll tell you the secret. I'll let you know." Shekavah yimtzu alze shnei otot atzmiim. He says there are two signs that a dream is for real. Very interesting. If you have a dream which is masudah, comes in the order. It's in a chronological order, or it's not a jumble of images. You know, sometimes you have these wild dreams and strange and wondrous things are happening. And that's not a dream to take seriously. But if it's masudah, stage after stage, it's happening, then benachon, and it seems to be correct, ki liyoto mushpa miyot shakoch hamadameh yagshim hashef ahu. He says sometimes your imagination plays a game with you. If it's a real dream, meaning a kind of prophecy, it's going to have to come to you in some sort of order. If it's not orderly, then you ignore it. That's interesting. And he says, then yoreh almashi yoreh amnam chalamot asham. When you have a dream which is not to be taken seriously, yovo b'li sidur, mabul balim, it'll come completely mixed up. In Eruv, with a mixture, divrei zarim, imena, it's all strange and wondrous things, nothing to be taken seriously. So basically, as far as the Abarbanel is concerned, the first sign of a dream, which one should essentially, how should we say, be concerned about, particularly if it repeats itself, is a dream which has some sort of seder, some sort of order to it. Now again, I'm not going to ask anyone to share their dreams because you just never know what's going to come up. When I talk to students about this, I get some interesting responses. With a more mature group, I don't want to go there because sometimes, you know, I've had cases where people have sort of heard this shit and said to me afterwards what they thought that I was the psychologist in the camp as well as the rabbi. And that sometimes you really need to go and see a professional if there's a dream which is really bothering you. something which is happening, which sort of repeats itself, it could very well be that one needs to see somebody to discuss it, you know, get it off your chest, as they say, and then you'll feel much better. But that's a separate discussion. I just want to give a sort of like general intro to the whole subject. That's a barbanel. Barbanel's vort, very simple, a dream which is in order is to be taken seriously. Okay. Number two, there's a comment of Rabbeinu Bachya, another great Spanish rabbi, also around the same period. And he says, V'dat, you should know, Ki chalomot b'nei shalosh sibot. You dream because of three reasons, three causes of dreams. B'nei ma'achalim, sometimes because of the food you eat, which obviously means that that dream is based on whatever, you know, especially if you sort of eat the fast food which America has given to the world and all the indigestion tablets that go with it. Or midnei machshavon, sometimes your thoughts are affecting you overnight and you start dreaming. Or midnei chizuk ha-nefesh, when he says sometimes it's something which comes from deep within. Your soul needs some sort of chizuk, some sort of strengthening. Chalom abo midnei chizuk ha-nefesh, if a dream comes because of the need to, as it were, for the soul to repair, hu amiti. That's the sort of dream which is true. Haraui mikulam shahu mechalot hanefesh. Basically, what it does is that it revives the soul. Now, again, this is much more difficult to define. But what I find so interesting with Rabbeinu Bachya is the what he says about what you should ignore. People always talk about, I think, having cheese late at night will make you dream sort of strange dreams. I always remember reading that. I don't know if it's true. All strange and wondrous things. People drink milk late at night, right, to try and calm them down. But I don't know whether that's going to give you strange dreams. There's a whole bunch of stuff over here, as I said. Sources which, again, seem to say, yes, there are situations where dreams are to be taken, let's say, seriously, to the point where you shouldn't just ignore them. There are other dreams which are caused by certain external events which really you can put down to that cause and therefore ignore the dream completely. If a dream is in an orderly fashion, said the Abarbanel, then that's to be taken seriously. And again, usually if you have some kind of crazy dreams and they are just going to be all over the place and they're not to be taken seriously. So you can see that the rabbis are struggling with this particular topic. It's not easy. There is a response, an interesting thing, of a response of a rabbi called the Tashbetz. Tashbetz, he lived in 15th century Spain. They all lived around the same time, which I find interesting. They're all living in Spain, and they're all writing about dreams. So there must have been something going on in Spain at that particular point. I guess so. And you know, my feeling is obviously to do also with the fact that Jews are being oppressed and thrown out of the country. So, you know, people started dreaming of maybe the Mashiach, and who knows what was going on. It happened. You know, and I think one understands that. But listen to this. He says the following, Tashbetz. He says, "Asecha meyedala ki yesh chalomot tzodkim." He says that your intelligence will tell you some dreams are correct. Ra'oi lachushle. They should worry. You know, should take them seriously. V'yesh chalomot bilti tzodkim. Ein lachushle, and there are some which are completely nonsense. Don't worry about them. Anachnu mesupakim b'zeh. He's prepared to say, we don't really know. I can't give you a golden rule. I can't tell you what's good and what's not good. He's not prepared to commit himself, but he says the following. If you want to come along and say that in the dream I dreamt that that money which you are holding on to is mine, then, I'm sorry chum, you can't get it. You are not allowed to use a dream in court, and I'm sure it was thrown out of a secular court as well, just to say, well, I had a dream that bundle of money which the Reuven is holding really belongs to me, Shimon. So the judge will say, Shimon, how do you know that's yours? So your Shimon will say, well, I had a dream last night. And the whole court will crack up laughing. It just is unacceptable evidence. And in Jewish law, it's the same thing. When it comes to monetary issues, you can't use a dream as evidence. And that's something that we alluded to before. He says, however, but, aval mishenadu b'chalom, if you dreamt that you were put into cherem, God forbid, there were cases, not so much today. One wonders why not, because there are certainly good examples of people that maybe cherem might work for them, to bring them back into their senses. But the famous case in Amsterdam, 1600, Spinoza, who was a Jewish philosopher at the time, but basically became a heretic, and the community could not do anything with him. The more they tried to how should we say, persuade him not to retract his heretical ideas, the more he was entrenched, and eventually they put him into Cherem. And I'm not really sure if that Cherem has been lifted. I'm not sure about that. But he says, even to this day, he's been dead for 400 years. But he says, in such a case, if you dreamt that you were in Cherem, or somebody was put in Cherem, Zeh Safek Menudeh, Safek Eino Menudeh, it becomes a Safek. It's interesting, it's a doubt. Harezek is Safek Yisurim. It becomes like a doubt of a prohibition. Because if you're put into excommunication, then there's a lot of halachot. You can't be buried in the place where you normally would be buried. You have a special section of the cemetery. You can't sit next to the person in shul. You have to keep a distance of 4 amot. This is a very serious item. When a person goes into cherem, it was not a joke. It was not a funny thing. It was a very serious kind of push of the person out of the community. There are famous stories, very, very famous stories, sometimes when a cherem was used and it was not correct. My favorite story, again, I'll just share this with you because it's such a beautiful story. About 10, 11 years ago, I took a group of students to Krakow, to Poland. And some of you will know Krakow, maybe some of you came from Krakow, I don't know. And in Krakow, there's a famous cemetery, the Ramor is buried there, the famous rabbi, Ramosha Isilis. And there is a rabbi buried there who is also famous, one of the most famous commentaries of the Mishnah. Somebody called Rav Yontav Lipman Heller. And he's buried not next to the Ramor in the main section of the cemetery, he's buried right on the edge. And when you go there, the obvious question is, why was this rabbi singled out to be buried on the edge? You know, all the rabbis are buried in the sort of central section there, and he's on the edge. What's going on? So, it's so interesting. Sorry? No, nothing to do with being a Kohen. Nothing to do with it. It wasn't in the Kohen section, and there's a story. And the story is like this, that there was a Jew in Krakow, and again, just to sort of talk about this situation here, there was how cherem goes wrong. There's a Jew in Krakow who, at the time of Rabbi Heller, was the Rav of the city. This Jew was very famous for two things. Number one, he was very wealthy, and his reputation was he was a kumtzum. He gave not a penny away. And the more the people tried to ask him for donations, the more he rejected it. And eventually, the community got together. They said, this man is impossible, we've got to put him into cherem. Which is exactly what they did. They excommunicated him. And the man stayed in excommunication literally for the rest of his life. And he was buried away from everybody in the cemetery on the side. And that was it. The guy died. He was kind of, seems to have been a miserable gentleman in his life. And was miserable in his death. And afterwards, the first Thursday night, after this person died, there was a knock at the door, Rabbi Heller's door. And there was a Jew standing there. And he said, Rabbi, we've got a problem. And there was a whole bunch of people with him. What's the problem, he said. He said that the Tomchei Shabbos, those you know that, you know, nowadays, people who need the food, they get food parcels on Thursday or Friday for Shabbos. In those days, they had in Krakow. The Tomchei Shabbos didn't turn up this week. We haven't got food for Shabbos. So the rabbi heard one after the other coming in to say to the rabbi, because they thought, who organized Tomchei Shabbos? It must be the rabbi. And the rabbi realized something was going on here. And when he made more inquiries and he tried to find out who did Tomchei Shabbos, couldn't find out. He then understood that this man, the Kamsa, had taken it upon himself, matan besetas, they say, without anybody knowing, he personally took the food packages around to everybody on a Thursday night. Unbelievable story. So what do you do now? You buried him in cherem. You buried him, he's away from everybody in the cemetery. Yeah. So Rabbi Heller said, you know what? I'm going to leave a request in my will that when it comes to the time that I have to be buried, I want to be buried next to this man. So that when they come to daven at my grave, they'll be davening at his grave as well. And that's to this day, you go to Krakow, that's what it is. It's an unbelievable story. And Rabbi Heller's buried right in the corner. I think the other tombstone is gone, but Rabbi Heller's stone is there. You can see where he's buried, the Tosfos Yontov. And he's buried right in the corner. And next thing you know is the grave of this Kamsan who was prepared, unbelievable. He was prepared to go to his grave without revealing the soccer, the charity that he was performing, literally on a weekly basis. Unbelievable. And this is a true story. This is I've read this in a number of places. So again, we're talking about cherem. In a dream, if somebody's put into cherem in a dream, do you take it seriously or not? Said the Tashbetz, Choliot, that maybe you do. It goes on and on and on. It's very, very fascinating. Let's just see, for instance, if you have a dream about a potential danger, what do you do in such a case? If you dream that something bad is going to happen, so we said before, there's something called Hatavat Chalom. there's not only the cancellation of a dream, but you can actually ask rabbis to come together, three people, and they can say the dream that you had should be good, should be good. Tav chalom tav, or tav chalom, whatever expression is used. The dream should be turned from something negative into something positive. And that again is a procedure which is carried out. There is an interesting comment of the rabbi known as the Orach HaShulchan. The Orach HaShulchan was one of the great deciders of Jewish law in Lithuania in the early 20th century, the late 19th century. And he said the following. He said, dreams today are only important in one situation, if it comes to a Talmud Chacham, to a Torah scholar. Interesting bias, I suppose you would say. But the reality is, he says, listen, if a Torah scholar has a dream, he's got to do something about it, because he's in contact with holy books and holy ideas, and the dream clearly has a meaning. If it's an ordinary person who's not a Talmud Chacham, who's not a scholar, then as far as you're concerned, says the Orach HaShulchan, ignore the dream completely. Completely irrelevant, have nothing to do with it, it's gone. And that's a very controversial statement. What I have, and I photocopied this, is that the Jewish press, very interestingly, this was a number of years ago, they had a letter from somebody in Bayside, New York, was asking about the blessing or the prayer that we make for dreams during the Duchening. So what they did, interestingly, is they reprinted an article which must have been printed in the Jewish press a long time ago. All right, this article that I saw was a reprint of an article which they said many years ago, so I suppose the 50s, the 60s, who knows, and the whole article is about dreams. And again, he brings all of these examples, all of these interesting cases of dreams. Sometimes we do worry about the interpretation, sometimes we don't worry about the interpretation. And really, it's very much on the lines of what we've said. He does bring the Orach HaShulchan's comment at the end, because remember, what we've said now is interesting. We've said, according to Barbanel, it's got to be a dream which is orderly, it's in order. And we've said now, according to the Orach HaShulchan, according to Rabbi Epstein, the famous author of that book, he says that dreams are only relevant when they come to scholars, but not, let's say, to regular common government Jews. So in which case, you've got certain situations here where rabbis will differ as to whether the dream should be taken seriously or not. One of the clues, I personally believe, so the whole thing is going back to Yosef. Because there's no question about it. Yosef was faced with two dreams, the butler and the baker. And, you know, when you look at the interpretation and you realize that Yosef essentially, although everyone explains it in their way, but Yosef could have interpreted one positively, one negatively, the other way around. And he actually went for the butler to be restored and the baker to be hanged. But if you look at the dream, what really guided him to do that? The answer is given, the rabbis say that dreams go after the interpretation. What I'm trying to say is that Yosef gave us a kind of clue to this, that if you're in a situation where the dream happens, and it does bother you, and you can interpret it for the best, or you can interpret it, unfortunately, not so good, then the obvious way to deal with it, and I would think this is what a psychologist would do, is to say to you, let's look at it in a positive way. Let's interpret that situation. Not, God forbid, that something negative is going to happen, but you'll survive. In other words, your dream will be that you'll get out of the difficult situation. Not, you're dreaming about a bad situation, but the meaning of the dream is you're going to survive the bad situation. You'll get out of it. An accident, whatever it may be, you'll be out of that accident. And therefore, a lot of what we're saying is very subjective. Again, all of the sources are all over the place. Some take the dream seriously, some don't. Some Gemara say you should take it seriously, some don't. Shmuel said that it's to do with where it comes from. If it comes from a malach, fine. Comes from a shade, comes from a demon, not so good. There's a wonderful sefer, I just have to mention, which is available called the Magid Meisharim. The Sefer Magid Meisharim is an amazing book. And it's available, you can go to a local bookstore, Brooklyn and wherever, or Monsi, they all have the same book. And it's a book written by the author of the Shulchan Aruch, Rabbi Yosef Karo. What was the book? The book is about his chavrusa, the learning that he did. Who did he learn with? He learned with an angel. Unbelievable. These are the Gedol Yisrael, you just can't believe. He learned with an angel every night. He went to sleep, and he had a chavrusa with the angel while he was asleep. And when he woke up in the morning, he wrote down all of the Torah that he studied with the angel, and he made a book. And you can read this book. This book is available. And you read the cover page. And he tells you, this is the result of my learning that I had with an angel every night. And it just blows the mind. And this is a rabbi that lived, what, 500 years ago, not so long ago. And he lived in Svat, and he lived obviously in a very, that particular group of rabbis, the Lechal Dodi, the Shlomo Alkabetz, and Rabbi Yosef Karo, the whole bunch of them who were real holy, holy men. But the concept of learning at a time of sleeping, at the time when he was dreaming, let's say, he was dreaming Torah thoughts, that is something very, very, very positive, very exciting. So what I would say is like this. You know, if one gets to the point where it really does bother you, and you have a situation like this of having to deal with it, that's a very unique situation. Most situations of dreams, they can be, let's put it this way, they can be interpreted away, not even to be interpreted. If it's not something, let's say, which is repeated, it's a one-off, you just ignore it, you'll forget about it. If it's something which repeats itself over and over again, then we saw that that's one of those things that maybe one has to take a bit more seriously. But then there are different ways of dealing with it. And as I said, if it really comes to the point where it bothers you, it affects you, the Jewish response is in fact to convene a group of people, three people, like a Beis Din, and they do what is called Hatzavat Chalom. They will say to you, whatever you dream, Tav, should become good. And of course that is explained by what we were just saying, that when it's the interpretation of the dream which fixes the whole concept of the dream, we hope that this Hatzavat Chalom will be an interpretation for the good. We will say to the person, Tav Chalom, that the Chalom should be good. And hopefully that's what happens. The dream is, as it were, goes away, and the effect of the dream is gone. Now again, a lot of you sort of may have studied psychology in your younger days, and you'll know that somebody like Freud and people like Jung, they went kind of crazy about dreams, and they analyzed dreams, and there are, as I said, many books in the library which you can find, which will give you a sort of different analysis. It's a very subjective situation, I have to say. And more to the point, my feeling is that in the majority of cases, with the concept that we've learned today of interpretation, and in other situations where you can just ignore it completely, in most cases it shouldn't really bother you. But again, it's just interesting to note that there is a lot of literature about this. There is a world response about it. Again, not only in terms of psychology, but also in terms of halakha. Should you ignore the dream? Should you follow the dream? And, you know, the bottom line is that this is a subject which, as I said, is very intriguing. Okay, I didn't want to do more than one session on this because otherwise you'll start falling asleep and dreaming, and then I don't know what's going to happen next. And anyone tells me they dreamt about me tomorrow morning, what can I say? I hope it was a good dream. That's all I can say. Any questions? Any comments? Yes. That's it.
And that, why? Because when you have a dream, you make it that it's good.
Right.
Everything
right.
Is good.
Right.
So I have never told anybody any dream of mine.
That's very interesting. And your mother came from Europe.
From
the Ukraine. A lot of this is probably bound up with folk traditions, meaning either from the Jewish world or let me suggest, even from the non-Jewish world. They were very influenced by what was going on around them. You know, the reality is that the famous things with dibuks and all these sort of things, this was coming not really from the Jewish sources as much as it was from the society around them as well. All right? And that's how they helped to deal with it. And it's exactly what we said. If you give a good interpretation, then the whole thing goes away.
Tell the dream to a fool.
That's so interesting. That's so interesting. And this is based on the traditional source.
I said that. I said, well, maybe there was something to what she said.
There's something to what she said.
Well, you know, it's a bullomizer or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I've
learned over the years never ever to reject what the Bobas told us, because they knew something. They didn't know it. They didn't know Shtei Keshuvim. They couldn't tell you chapter and verse where it came from, but they knew it. And, you know, I have memories of what my grandmother used to say or what she used to do, and the Kanaan horrors and whatever it is. You know, you make fun of it sometimes when you get a bit older because you think this is all ridiculous, but it really isn't. There's something in it. I'm not saying go crazy about it and don't sort of become obsessive, which is a part of the problem today. People become very obsessive about a lot of this stuff. But don't ignore it. You know, just be respectful of this tradition. What your mother told you is wonderful.
I never tell anybody.
That's great. That's great. I hear you. I hear you. That's very interesting. Yeah.
A couple of nights ago, I was walking around and there is a lady reading a mystery story.
Yeah.
Sure enough, Overnight I had a dream of a mystery.
That's unbelievable. And again, you have to say that, you know, what you saw during the day affected you at night time. And ignore it. You know, I hope it didn't bother you, this dream. The only thing that would bother me if it was you read the last page of who did it, who carried out the murder. That would be annoying. Because you want to read the book. You want to find out, you know, want to go through the book. That, I'm just joking with you, but you know what I mean. It's kind of interesting. We'll have one couple. We'll go around the room. Here and then there. Yes, Mrs. Bennett.
Talking about the Jewish Jubas, I come from Hungary. My mother and grandmother said, don't tell your dream to anybody.
That's also right.
Because it's very interesting. We were in France after the war, and people were coming from Romania. My mother said, the other women said, from all different countries. My mother said the same.
That's so interesting. That's amazing.
It's wonderful. Also, you use the expression, Nishta Hina, Nishta
Her. Yeah, well, all right.
I have to tell you that together, Nishta Hina, Nishta Her. When you cross a rabbit with a chicken.
With a chicken, yeah. I was going to resist that joke, but it was a good joke. All right, thank you. That's wonderful. The joke. Okay, yes.
Did you ever hear where three, four people dreamt the same dream?
That's interesting, and that
and
is...
Then they followed. This was more than a dream, because the family was somebody left in Poland.
Right. So interesting. And again, that's a dream obviously you take seriously. That the famous tefillah, we say it, everybody says on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, the Sana Toka, which is the most serious part of the davening, who will live, who will die, who will bekitza, lo bekitza, that was transmitted in a dream. According to read the story, you know, you have the machzor at home, look at that story, it's an unbelievable story. And the rabbi died and he came back to his student after a couple of days and he said to him, this tefillah must be written down. And we say it to this very day, every shul in the world says this tefillah. I'm not sure the Sfarim do it, but I guess they probably do it as well. I don't know, but I would guess so. And it's all from a dream. So there are occasions when, you know, the dream can be really, really important.
The end of this story is that, it's a long story, but I just want to say the end, that Hagar's son is now in Israel at Talmud Chochem.
Oh, wow.
She was great.
And that was unbelievable. Wow. All right, one or two more comments. One and two, and then I think we need to go and get warmed up. Yes.
What about recurring dreams?
Well, that's the thing we said before. If it recurs, then already there's more reason.
Not bad, but just recurring.
Just recurring. Then there's more reason to take it seriously, and then one should look for interpretation, positive interpretation. If it gets to the point where it really bothers you, there is a Jewish method of dealing with it. Hatovas chalom. I tell you, I've done this once. And it was an experience. The person was clearly bothered by the dream, kept repeating over and over again. We sat down, the three people in the shul, and we did this tefillah. And you could see the person, the weight of the shoulders. It was very interesting. And as I said, I've only done it once in my life, but I remember it. I remember it really. It was kind of doing a real mitzvah. I really felt there was a mitzvah. It was assignment. Oh, really? Is that another? There you go. It's another Eitza. Fabulous. I best try that. But I don't dream very much.
Do you remember?
Shh. Just
the...
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, and those dreams are very... Oh, really?
I should do something. He can't rest where he is.
Yeah. Yeah, and many people in your circumstance have reported dreams like that, parents coming to them, and those, again, don't get me wrong, those are really important dreams that one doesn't ignore, one takes, you know, when ideally you speak to a rav, or you speak to somebody who is a professional who knows how to explain to you, you know, sort of if you need to understand it, it's... And they made a cave. Oh, wow.
And I screamed, please stop and try to do it differently.
Yeah.
They said, it's going to cost you a lot of money. I said, I didn't ask you how much it's going to cost.
Yeah.
Just make him satisfied.
Yeah, and that's what you do. Wow.
I screamed so hard in my
school. The papers.
Oh, all right. I've got that. I hear what you're saying. I do hear that.
And I couldn't say your cups and
yeah.
The
yeah. 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 All right. Just one second. Yeah. Allowed to take it. It's so interesting. Wow. And these are, again, you know, I'm very careful. I don't want to cause people pain this afternoon. That's the last thing I would ever want to do. But I so appreciate the fact you shared that with everybody, because that's very precious. I can see it's delicate. It's very delicate. But at the same time, you know, as I'm saying, there is something to be aware of. 95% of situations, not talking about that situation, but most situations, we can ignore it completely. But when it does become something serious, there are aids, there are ways to deal with it. And again, thank you for sharing that, because that's unbelievable. Wow, unbelievable stories. I'm going to hold it at this point. Tomorrow, we'll talk about something completely different. And I hope everyone has very pleasant dreams tonight without any issues whatsoever. And Mr. Shen, tomorrow, we're going to talk a bit about kashrus, a bit of the background into the subject. Have a good day, everybody.